this land is your land, and this land is my land. From the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
So I took a walk on Monday down to the state capitol to observe the scene firsthand. There were a group of several hundred, maybe several thousand protesters there at the time, and they were singing this song. The group was smaller on Monday than it was certainly on the weekend. On Saturday, probably the biggest protests against Governor Walker's budget repair bill, with a smaller group of Governor Walker's supporters as well on Saturday. We're going to talk about the protest movement in Madison, in Wisconsin, based on this workers' rights issue. And we will take a look also at the history and effectiveness of public protests and how today's protests compare to Tea Party rallies, anti-war protests in the 1960s, and others. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, February the 23rd. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest who has studied the protest movement in this country and elsewhere. And we will wonder, have you participated in these protests or the counter-protests? Describe the scene for us. Or if you're watching this on television or following it in the news, your thoughts and reactions on how effective is this to have tens of thousands of protesters at the state capitol over the last week and a half. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. By the way, on Facebook, I did provide a link to a video that's making the rounds. It's a montage of the sights and sounds of the protests over the past several days, and you can take a listen and a look at that if you'd like to get a sense if you haven't already. Our guest is David Meyer. He's a professor of sociology and political science at the University of California, Irvine. His books include The Politics of Protest, Social Movements in America. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for joining us extra early on the West Coast.
This is normally the time we talk about Wisconsin here in California.
Yeah, that's right. Well, have you been watching? I'm assuming you have been following the protests in Wisconsin. What do you think?
You know, everybody is watching what's happening in Wisconsin. This is it's not just Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert who are paying attention. Mm-hmm. And when I go into work in the morning, the first thing I ask people is, what else do you know? This is getting national attention in basically every quarter. Teachers, my kids' teachers are talking about what's going on in Wisconsin. So, yes, I've been following it as closely as I can. I've been amazed, interested. I'm watching all the spillover effects. I'm watching unions in Ohio respond to the unions in Wisconsin. I'm watching the governor in New Jersey respond to Governor Walker and try to amplify what he's doing. It seems like it could be a critical moment in American politics.
Yeah. How impressive are those crowds?
How impressive are the what?
The crowds at the state capitol, what you've been seeing.
They seem huge. And remember, I'm in California. I know what it's like in Wisconsin this time of year. People are sleeping outside. They're playing bagpipes outdoors. It's an extraordinary turnout. And I don't know that they're going to be able to maintain these kinds of crowds for very long, but shutting down schools, this is huge.
Yeah. Do you sense this is a grassroots movement or being fueled by any outside agitation?
Well, people don't spontaneously get up and generate 30,000 people in front of the state capitol. I've seen 30,000. I've seen 60,000 estimates. There's definitely an administrative infrastructure sponsoring protests on both sides. So we know that organized labor has been big in helping to generate the crowds against Governor Walker, and we know that Americans for Prosperity and the Koch brothers have funded counter-protesters. But the money and the organization by themselves don't do anything. if they can't get people to believe in what they're doing and to make some kind of commitment, you don't get those kinds of crowds.
For the most part, these have been civil, peaceful, even festive protests for the most part. I think maybe a handful of people have been arrested throughout the last week and a half. Is that unusual that these aren't they're passionate, but they're not angry and violent?
This is the American story at this point. Protests tend to be civil. You know, I mean, since the 1970s, protests in America tend to be civil, tend to be predictable. After the 1960s, police departments in cities across the United States found it was better to work with protesters and figure out how they could express their claims rather than trying to crack down on them and repress them. And it made it easier to protest, but it may have made it less meaningful because it's less disruptive.
Mm-hmm. Well, how meaningful is this going to be? Tens of thousands of people over the past week and a half, national, even international news created by these protests, yet our governor, Governor Walker, just last night addressed the state in what he called a fireside chat, and he's not budging. He's not going to remove the restrictions on collective bargaining, the limitations on public unions in Wisconsin from this bill that's generating all the protests, even though the unions have conceded to pay more for wages and or for benefits and pensions. So far. The governor's not budging, even though these people have been protesting. Why do you think that is?
Okay. How meaningful? It's already been meaningful. It's already been important in mobilizing labor around the United States, particularly in the Middle West, in the Midwest. In terms of Governor Walker saying, well, I was wrong. The people have convinced me that my ideas about organized labor that I've, you know, expressed in public office for the last 10 years were wrong. I've changed my mind. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen no matter what the demonstrators win. And that makes sense. You know, no elected official is going to say, I was going to do this, but, you know, the demonstrations were so big that, I decided to back down and do something I don't believe in instead. That doesn't mean it doesn't matter. You know, back in the early 1980s, there were big movements and protests for nuclear disarmament. And President Reagan always said, those protests have nothing to do with our policy. But by the way, we have some new arms control proposals, completely unrelated to the protests. And you're foolish to believe that those things aren't related.
We are talking with David Meyer. He's a professor of sociology and political science at the University of California, Irvine. His books include The Politics of Protest, Social Movements in America. And we are talking about the protest movement that is going on as we speak in Wisconsin and spreading across the rest of the country for that matter. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions. Have you participated in any of these protests? What are your thoughts watching this unfold? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Here's a listen to another song that has been played frequently at the rallies at the state capitol. I know this is another one that we have heard. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Coming up a little later today, Kathleen Dunn will open her lines after 10 o'clock, your lines actually, welcoming your calls concerning Governor Walker's address to the state last night and his stance on the budget repair bill and your thoughts on this standoff that's going on in the state of Wisconsin over public worker rights. We are talking about the protests that have developed over this issue and looking some at the history and effectiveness of public protests with David Meyer, a professor of sociology and political science at the University of California, Irvine. And we have many callers, so I want to give you a chance. Tim in Wanakee is with us first. Hello, Tim.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
My experience has been very positive. I've been marching down there for about 6 out of the past 7 days, and I've never felt such a sense of shared purpose with other people from Wisconsin. I'm a professional. I don't belong to a union, but, you know, being down there with the students and academics and blue-collar workers, white-collar workers, families, it's just been kind of an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to participate?
Well, I work with a lot of state workers. I'm married to a teacher. I'm the son of a teacher. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, civilized nations believe that collective bargaining is a fundamental human right. And you just can't summarily take that away from folks. And you know, even the people who call up and say, well, you know, I don't have a union, the fact is they could. And that's really the issue.
Yeah. And what do you hope results from this movement, Tim? What do you want to see happen?
Well, I want to see the collective bargaining rights left alone. I guess I'm still hopeful that can happen. And if that does not happen, then I hope that this hastens the transition to a government that's more friendly to its workers.
A reaction or a response, David Meyer?
Oh, that's very interesting. It doesn't surprise me that when Tim goes out to, you know, speak for the cause that he believes in, he finds people he agrees with and people he respects. And those kinds of connections tend to extend way beyond the event. So, I mean, the protests that we see in the State House or outside the State House is like the tip of an iceberg about all the politics that's going on right now.
If this budget repair bill passes and the collective bargaining rights are restricted, even though all these protesters were hoping to stop that, why do you say this movement, the protests still mattered? That's
an interesting question. Well, I don't know whether or not this union is going to be able to stage a general strike. That would be the biggest thing in the United States on you know, labor since the 1930s. Even if it doesn't, the Tea Party anti-healthcare people lost in 2010. President Obama was able to sign a healthcare reform bill, but they didn't go away, and they exercised a huge amount of influence in the last election, bringing you Governor Walker, for example. And so one defeat, this is a long, long struggle. It's not going to be over no matter what happens with collective bargaining rights next week in Wisconsin. And the connections and the connections that are built among activists matter over the long haul. The ideas that come out, the organizations that are built, these things wind up exercising influence over a long period of time.
Yeah, this is setting the stage for 2012.
It's not just, yes, 2012 and mm-hmm. Indiana and mm-hmm. Ohio and Pennsylvania, sure.
Let's go next to Scott in Green Bay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning. Just a couple quick comments. I noticed a lot of students are participating in this, and not to be critical of students, but most of them haven't developed critical thinking skills yet to be able to really understand and analyze this problem. I'm going to use my 22-year-old son's statement to me one time. I've always wanted to go to a protest. I just didn't know what I would want to protest. Mm-hmm. You know, so people get caught up in that. But my main point was, Joy, you had mentioned about the Tea Party, and what interests me is how this is being covered. If you watch it on the news, it's covered in a very positive light. These, you know, the protesters are great people. They're doing a great thing, even though you see Mubarak and Hitler signs on a regular basis when you're watching it on TV. I've seen it almost every time. But any time the Tea Party was rallying or protest, that typically got very negative press attention, very negative coverage. I mean, to be honest, I don't remember a positive story or a positive portrayal of the Tea Party. And everybody knows that for the most part that's been covered negatively. Why is this covered so positively?
I'd like to talk about mm-hmm. that. I saw all those pictures of Hitler and the Tea Party rallies, and I knew that President Obama wasn't a Nazi, and I know that Governor Walker's not a Nazi, and I'd feel very, very happy if we only saw the Nazis and not the Nazi term come up when we're talking about Germany in the 1920s and 1930s. I'd feel fine about that. That doesn't help anybody's cause. And I'm disappointed that some activists are doing that. At the same time, when I look at media coverage of the Tea Party, I saw lots of positive coverage. When I asked people around What do you think of the Tea Party? I hear positives as much as negatives. I hear people talking about grassroots democracy. We tend to respond to the stuff that makes us angry. And so you notice when a cause you believe in is portrayed negatively more than when it's portrayed positively. I've seen negative coverage of this movement also. And there is a disturbing double standard. So, you know, we've seen media outlets that liked the Tea Party disparage the anti-American nature of the protests in Madison. And that's duplicitous. This is, you know, they're both expressions of people who lost at the polls and have taken to the streets. And that's what that's not new in America.
Yeah, what about a lot of students there are there and they don't even know why they're there, according to Scott. At least he says his son doesn't know.
There's no admissions requirements to go to a demonstration. If you ask around at any demonstration, you're going to find somebody who doesn't understand anything. You don't have to look very far to find that. And by going to those protest events, some of them wind up learning something. You know, I mean, we saw those town hall meetings during 2009, and people were screaming, "I want the government to stay out of my Medicare." And people who knew a teeny, teeny bit about health care in the United States would laugh at people like that. Well, that's the first engagement in politics for lots of people. When you're 22 or 19, I wish they knew more. I teach 19-year-olds. I wish they knew more. But this is a start.
Yeah, the same thing was going on in the 1960s with the Vietnam War protests, mainly college students?
You know, when you look at the activists who were engaged in the 1960s, there were some young people who knew the issues inside and out, who started in student government and moved to organize groups like the Students for a Democratic Society, and there were other people who joined in at the last minute because a friend was going. And again, there's no admissions requirements. Everybody can get in. There's not a bouncer walking the door. You go to any demonstration, this is an old media trick, and you run lots of tape and you interview people, and you can find people who completely undermine whatever cause they're protesting for. I wouldn't say that's most of the people who are out there. And I would say that it's a great place to start learning about politics.
Our next caller is Roger in Adams. Hello, Roger.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Say, I've been paying very particular attention to this whole issue as it's been going on. I was an AFSCME member for 3 years, and I resigned. What I don't see happening in the media, and it kind of frustrates me, all of these union employees that are down in Madison have the luxury of paid days off, taking sick days, basically abusing sick days. I work back in the private sector now. I don't have the luxury of being able to go down to Madison and protest, because if I did, I would be there in a heartbeat. I can't afford to take the days off of work. And, you know, being a taxpayer, no one is covering what the taxpayers are saying. We have already spoken. We elected Mr. Walker as our governor. He is speaking for the taxpayers. The union people are down in Madison speaking. They should have been talking 8 months ago, not now when it's here. They should have known this was coming.
Roger, thanks very much for the call. I don't know how we want to get into the specific policy matter here.
The issue is, the unions were engaged in the election. They contributed money to try to defeat Scott Walker, and they lost. And the opponents of national health care of any sort were engaged in the 2010 election, and they contributed money and they organized for John McCain, and they lost. And in America, when you lose at the polls, it doesn't mean that politics is over. It doesn't mean that you just shut up for 4 years. It means you try to find other ways to express your ideas and to try to mobilize people who believe what you believe. In fact, it's very often after an electoral defeat that you see lots of protest mobilization.
The Tea Party-backed counter rally on Saturday had, I don't know, several thousand people. I can't remember the estimate, maybe 6,000, something like that. And it was estimated that the the worker rallies had twice the number, if not more than that. However, some of the signs that you'd see with the Tea Party rally on the state Capitol grounds, signs said something like, "I have to work during the week." So that's why I'm here. Talk a little bit about Roger's concern that those big crowds are just union people who can take the day off.
Well, if you're having a big event in Madison, you know that there are going to be students involved in it, and students have generally more flexible schedules than even their teachers, like me, and that's part of what affects what turnout is like. The union people enjoy more capacity to take time off than people who work in the private sector. Well, I mean, we know that companies have often bussed in their workers to pay for causes they believe in. This isn't unusual. But generating those kinds of crowds that we've seen in Madison over the weekend, over the course of a long period of time, when people do have to work, that's very unlikely to happen. I want to mention the counter-protest thing. I appreciate, Joy, you're pointing out the asymmetry in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
In general, once the other side gets out, most media coverage focuses on, there's protesters on both sides, and they neglect what the balance of forces actually is.
Yeah. Well, we have other callers, so I can move on. Jerry in Burlington. Hello, Jerry.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Two quick observations. The first is I feel this is going to backlash against the Republicans because they've wakened up a very apathetic union movement in the United States. But more importantly, it's not Scott Walker that needs to cave. If we could get four Republican legislators to switch sides, we would then be able to defeat this bill. I, for one, would work for and donate money to any Republican who will back us on this. And I'm a lifelong Democrat. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jerry.
That's interesting. I mean, it's worth pointing out that what goes on in the streets is closely related to what's going on in the statehouse. These protests are taking off partly because the Democrats in the state Senate have taken off to draw attention and give them time to organize.
Mm-hmm. And have Republicans awoken a sleeping giant?
I don't know if it's a giant, and I don't know if it was fast asleep, but they certainly got labor excited in a way that we haven't seen in a long time. But it's not going to be organized labor, and it's not going to be big business that winds up making the biggest difference. It's going to be the regular people who are not affiliated with either group who decide to take sides as these protest events play out, because it's the crowd that winds up mattering in a big fight, in a big political fight.
An email from Jason who says, I watched two people discussing their views during the protest. One was holding a pro-Walker sign and the other was a pro-union. Both were friendly and having an intelligent conversation about their views. This is what you get when you have tens of thousands of college-educated people rallying, no arrests, and a strong, intelligent voice.
Jeez, Jason was in exactly the right place at the demonstration. I bet you could have found other things also.
Well, I don't know. So there weren't angry fisticuffs or anything going on that Saturday when the counter rallies were going on. Is that surprising in any way?
I think most Americans don't like to get into fistfights,
mm-hmm.
and I think that both sides had demonstration marshals who were particularly concerned with keeping things civil and told people, if you overreact, we're going to be judged on your misconduct. And then maybe there's something different about Wisconsin also, where people are educated and civil and polite, and they are talking about these issues. I love to hear that.
Well, I guess there's a little bit of that Midwest nice going on.
and a good state university system that's underfunded.
Yeah. Teresa in Chippewa Falls is with us next. Hi.
Hi. I just want to say I was at the Capitol on Saturday, and I was just so moved by how caring and considerate all the protesters were there. It was just out-of-the-world experience. And I was in the rotunda, and we wanted to have a chance to speak on the loudspeaker or the megaphone. All we had to do was hold up the peace sign, and then everyone would get the message, okay, it's time to quiet down, and we let the other person speak. And it was just so moving. I mean, like, it was just an awe-inspiring experience. It was just so great. I just wanted to say that. And, like, some of these news stations, you know, reporting that it's a riot or it's, you know, violent or whatever. I'm just saying I saw none of that. And I don't know where they're getting
well,
this.
Well, I don't think someone's reporting that there are riots. I don't think so, really, Teresa.
Fox News reported it one day or so that it was violent. You're just going, no, it was the most peaceful, moving, caring, courteous people I have ever met in my entire world. I mean, there are people from out of the country who are ordering pizzas for us. I mean, it's just insane.
That is funny. Have you heard about this, David Meyer? The people are donating to a pizza place in Madison and from all over the world, and then pizzas are delivered to the protesters.
Yeah, it's a wonderful stimulus program for the for all those great ethnic restaurants in Madison.
Can you talk a little bit about the organization that has to go into something like this?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, you have to get the word out to people who you think are responsive. The big predictor about whether somebody participates in a protest action or not is whether they're asked. And so you need organization to get the word out, tell people something is going on, and then you have to manage logistics, which means getting people there. Now, in this case, because there are so many students in Madison, you have a base of that makes a large turnout possible, but there are buses that you charter, there are carpools that you have to organize, and back in the old days, you used to do this by going door-to-door or using telephone trees, but now it seems that Facebook mm-hmm. is the primary way of getting the word out.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing how much is happening on Facebook. This is all sorts of, you know, there's going to be, you know, this rally at this time, or, you know, put the word out that we need XYZ. And it's really, the social media is really taking a huge role in this, isn't it?
And, well, I mean, the social media is a technique mm-hmm. for getting the word out. It's a technology. But the communication would be happening anyway. It would just be going through different routes. So when Teresa reads something on Facebook that there's going to be a group assembling at this corner, she can go there and have a pretty good idea that she's going to see somebody she knows, that the people on that corner are going to agree with her, that there are going to be signs, that it's going to be safe, and it makes it easier to go out. And I'm moved by Teresa's description of feeling empowered and connected to democracy, because this is the way you learn about how government works and doesn't work. It's the first experience of politics of many, many people.
Are rallies or protests like this generally a transformative experience for individuals, even life-changing?
For some people, it makes a difference, but you know, life doesn't change like flicking on a light switch. Rather, you go and you feel more comfortable, and it makes it easier to try something else. Maybe you go back to campus and say, maybe I should take that Introduction to American Government class. You find friends who you didn't know you had before. You make connections, and it's kind of cumulative. It builds over time.
Yeah, and I saw it happening to some extent with the Tea Party movement of a few years ago. People who said that they never really took a big interest in politics were out there taking a big interest in politics, and that's happening here too.
And again, the real story isn't the event itself. The event itself is something that you organize around. It's kind of the punctuation marks in a much larger campaign. And what winds up mattering is how engaged these people are over the long haul. Do they start going to PTA meetings? Do they maybe run for a local school board? Do they start contributing to campaigns when they never did before? This is often the, you know, going to a demonstration is often the first step in developing a lifelong commitment to political engagement. And going out to a demonstration in the streets is very, very much like holding a sign in support of a candidate, going to a teach-in about proposed school reform. It's all of a piece.
I want to ask you just a little bit about the signs and the chants. Let's take a listen to what has become one of the more popular chants at the protests at the state capitol. So, Kill the Bill is, I mean, there are others, but that has to be one of the most common ones. Where does that come from?
The last time I heard it was when the Tea Party people were protesting against Obama's health care reform.
Oh, so they took that was used during that movement as well.
Sure. Yeah. I think the context is different now, but if you find a slogan that works, why not take it from the other side?
Just in the fairness and balance here, here's the chant of the Tea Party group at the state capitol on Saturday. So,
what are they saying?
Pass the bill.
Sure.
Yeah, there are a lot of creative signs though too. Or T-shirts. I saw a kid walking around with "Teach me how to bargain" instead of "Teach me how to bucky," and others. I mean, that's just individual creativity, and some people are funny, huh? I don't.
It's when people go out to a demonstration. If an organizer can ensure that the experience is positive in some way, they're more likely to come back. They're more likely to stay for a longer amount of time. So for the anti-Walker forces to be able to generate Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine, to have him come out and sing old Woody Guthrie songs, that creates a special experience for people who are participating that nobody who's not there gets to participate in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a special thing that people are going to remember. And the humor is also a part of that. And then, you know, I've been in California during all of this, but I can't imagine that people aren't telling stories and talking about their kids and sharing food and talking about places to eat while they're marching in between the chants.
Yeah, and talking about sleeping over in the state capitol, too.
Isn't it cold there?
Well, inside the dome, it's okay. So, yeah, there's sleepovers. People are camped out there all night, you know, so it's not just a during-the-day phenomenon.
One of the key things that I'm reading about here is that the bill that Governor Walker wants to sign specifically exempts public safety workers, including firefighters and police officers. But as I understand it, the firefighters and the police officers have been standing with the teachers and the nurses and the other unionized workers.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah. And indeed, some of the video that you'll see posted on YouTube or on various sites are the firefighters going through the Capitol playing bagpipes, and it's, you know, very emotional that the firefighters who are exempted from the changes are supporting the workers who are protesting.
And I love the pipes. I love the bagpipes. I mean, they're inspiring and they're loud.
Mm.
Do you know why people march when they play bagpipes?
No.
To get away from the noise.
We are talking with David Meyer, professor of sociology and political science at the University of California, Irvine. His books include The Politics of Protest, Social Movements in America. And we are taking a look at the history and the effectiveness of public protests from today's protests at the state capitol and all over the state, for that matter, and how now these protests are growing and spreading all over the country. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Song.
Okay, I don't think Pete Seeger was at the protests in Madison over the past week and a half, but that song certainly has been sung once or twice. We are talking about the protest movement that started at the state capitol in Madison a week and a half ago, and it's now spreading across the country. All eyes are still on Madison, though, and Wisconsin as this effort continues even today. We're taking a look at the effectiveness, the history of protest movements with David Meyer, who's a professor of sociology and political science at the University of California, Irvine. His books include The Politics of Protest. And these protests are spreading across, and other states are having this happen too. But I also saw Professor Meyer yesterday in New York City, actors from the Actors Equity Union protesting in solidarity with Wisconsin workers. They're wearing cheese heads and protesting outside of Fox News headquarters. In fact.
Fox is a good target for actors to organize around, and I guess those cheese heads, which were very valuable a couple of weeks ago during the Super Bowl, you know, you want to get more use out of it once you put it in your wardrobe.
Yeah, and you know, these protests are spreading across the country. I mean, where do you see this headed?
Well, basically, right now there's a battle between big capital, which is, you know, represented by the Koch brothers, and organized labor. And those are both relatively unpopular constituencies. What it's all about is getting people who are not normally engaged in this issue to be engaged. And what winds up mattering over the long haul is which side they take. So, you know, I've been thinking about it. The teachers' unions, if you wind up saying that the important thing is to fund my kid's teacher and siding with the union, whether you're a member or not, that winds up being consequential over the long haul. If you say instead, I'm tired of paying for teachers' pensions, then that winds up helping people like Governor Christie and Governor Walker and the Tea Partiers. And we're in this completely open moment where all kinds of things can happen, but it's not going to go away. And it's going to be a big issue for the future.
Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn will be talking with a guest about the uprisings that are toppling governments in the Middle East. We saw this in Tunisia and Egypt, and now there is a very scary growing movement going on in Libya right now. So she's going to be talking about these protests in the Middle East, since I have an expert on protests here. I know it's more looked at more social movements in America, but what's your take on what's happening in the Middle East right now?
I'm overwhelmed by what's happening in the Middle East. And the interesting thing is that nobody predicted it would play out this way. And the spread, and there's an analogy here between what's happening in Madison and what happens in Tunisia. You know, protest spreads when people look and have their imagination sparked and their ideas of what's possible sparked by what somebody else is doing. And the way this works is when you look at other people who are active and see some element of similarity between them and yourself, and you realize that something besides participating in an election in the United States or something besides being quiet in the Middle East is possible. And when one person tries something and other people watch, it can create this bandwagon effect when you understand, oh, it's safe and it's possible to do something. And I think what's happening in the Middle East is similar, though on a completely different scale, to what's happening in the Midwest. One interesting and weird thing is, if the protesters in Madison win, Governor Walker is still going to be governor. There's not going to be a helicopter landing in front of the state house to evacuate him to someplace safer. You know, nobody in the United States is talking about regime change. Protest is part of the political repertoire in the United States. It's not a transition to some brand new system.
Yeah, that's true. But there is talk of recall, even though he's not the governor's not eligible for recall. He hasn't been in office for for a year yet, but people want to recall him, or Republican lawmakers, or there's even a Utah group that just announced it's going to go after our Democratic senators who fled to Illinois. So recall's another form of protest, isn't it?
Absolutely. We lost the governor here in California due to recall. That was, and we wound up with 7 years of Governor Schwarzenegger, who actually I think he went to college in Wisconsin.
He got his degree in business from the University of Wisconsin Superior. So yeah, Arnold didn't stay in the dorm there. I think it was actually correspondence. Seriously, it was. You might have spent a little bit of time there, but Susan in Coon Valley is with us. Hello, Susan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Real good. I am very proud to be part of Wisconsin and part of the protest movement. You know, your guest mentioned a while back something about finance contribution. People ought to start looking at where Walker's money came from, but be that as it may. The other thing about protesting, you know, it's not only in Madison. There are various places across Wisconsin that these protests are growing. We had thousands of people that showed up in La Crosse, including the firefighters and the police department, backing the movement. And I can only hope that if the numbers swell, which I think they will in Madison, that at some point our governor will realize that, okay, what does it hurt if we slow this process down? How about if we come to the table and negotiate and talk about this to get this moving? I think there's a fear in his part that the longer this is not taking place, or a vote is not taking place, that people are going to become more and more educated, because this is only one component of his bill. He's doing some other things in that bill that are critical, that will have a rippling effect in Wisconsin. And I hope people will seriously consider that.
All right. Thanks very much, Susan, for the call. I think that did upset some people anyway, that this bill was introduced on a Friday and 4 days later, you know, the legislature was ready to pass it, David Meyer. That rush freaked out a lot of people out.
Well, yeah, and that's, you know, the governor in Ohio has basically said that was Governor Kasich in Ohio. He said that was Governor Walker's mistake. Governor Kasich says, we're holding hearings and we're getting all the arguments out, and therefore there will be much broader public support and understanding of what we're trying to do in Ohio. Now, that remains to be seen, but it clearly has backfired to try to rush something through. And remember, the health care bill that President Obama signed was in hearings for months and months and months, and it was more than a year to pass the bill. So that's not going to be something the strategists look back at fondly.
Yeah, and Susan's right that not everybody is showing up at our state capitol here in Madison. Some supporters of public union workers are just, you know, doing walkouts in their communities all over the state of Wisconsin. So it's happening in other communities too.
It's an extraordinary thing. It's the same kind of spread, and people who don't want to spend the money on gasoline to come down to Madison can make the same statement in their communities and be seen by their neighbors, not just national TV cameras. And that can wind up mattering a great deal over the long haul. I want to point out something else. Susan said there's lots of other stuff in this bill that people aren't even talking about yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer that bill remains in debate, the more likely people are to find out about it. Now, in most states, austerity includes not only cutting back on the compensation and the benefits for state workers, but also cuts to things that most people want their states to spend money on, like public education. And if the organized labor groups, unions, can forge alliances with people who send kids to school or depend upon firefighters to put out their house, to put out a fire in their house, well, then that's not a marginal group anymore.
Mm-hmm. A brief react, though, to Governor Walker has said it more than once, and he said it again last night, that he's not going to let the voices of union workers drown out the voices of 5.5 million taxpayers in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, as I understand it, people who earn a salary in Wisconsin, whether it's paid for by the government because they're a teacher or paid for by a company because they, you know, make something or a lawyer, they all pay taxes. Mm-hmm. So the unionized workers are also taxpayers. It's absolutely expected that the governor would say, I'm not going to let these protesters influence what I do. I'm working for somebody else, the silent majority, who is not silent now either. But that doesn't mean it doesn't matter.
Let's go to Kevin in Madison. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I've been really incredibly moved and inspired by the massive outpouring of people and the great good cheer among them up at the Capitol. I'm lucky enough to live in Madison. I'm a nurse with the University Hospital. I'm a union employee. But, you know, so many times there have been demonstrations that have not had the support of all, not just unionized workers, but workers all across the board. And this has brought out a huge spectrum that I think everyone is out there. I've come across people with signs saying I'm a small business owner, and this bill will kill my business. You know, businesses that depend on the discretionary spending of the middle class will really suffer.
Yeah. Well, there's a coalition, I suppose, too. David Meyer, I'm sorry to cut you short, Kevin, but we're just about out of time. Your thoughts on that, David Meyer?
I think that's amazing. Once again, we're hearing somebody who like took a step out and went to an event and found huge support for what he believed, found connections with his neighbors and his community, and found the idea that we can be more powerful in the future. I want to talk about the middle class thing. Governor Christie of New Jersey says this is a class war. There are people with good benefits and good insurance and people without, and therefore we're going to take the insurance away from the people with good benefits. And that's a different kind of class war than what I read about in college.
Yeah. I'm sorry. We just have a minute to go, and I did want to ask you if are we going to be reading about this in our history books in the years to come?
It's going to be in my history book. I'm going to write about it. You never know what's going to happen in the future, but you didn't know the battle at Lexington and Concord was going to be the start of a big movement and a campaign that ultimately ended up in the creation of the United States. There's absolutely no reason to think that that this event in Madison could overshadow all the other significant events in popular history that we've heard about coming from Madison.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
David Meyer, professor of sociology and political science at the University of California, Irvine. His books include The Politics of Protest, Social Movements in America. Thanks to Rob Ferret and Chris Molina for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.